Good morning. It is 7 minutes past 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm filling in today and this week for Joy Cardine. It is the Week in Review, that time of the week when we take a look back at the top news stories of the week with our guests, and we've got some big news to talk about this week in terms of the debt ceiling, in terms of the economy. Of course, there's a GOP presidential race out there, chance of a recession here in Wisconsin. We've got some recall races going on that some of you may have heard about, record spending in connection with those, and it looks like Democrats and Republicans both say that they are going to turn out in big numbers, so we'll see how that goes. We've got two guests who join us this week to talk about and help put these stories in some context. Ben Mansky is with us. He is the executive director of Liberty Tree, and he is with us in the Wisconsin Public Radio studios. Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Gene.
Good to have you along. And also with us is Joe Egelhoff, a research and development specialist at Wisconsin Family Action. And good morning, Joe Egelhoff.
Good morning, Gene. Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Joe.
Okay, well, you know, it was hard to pick a lead story this week, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go with the economy. I'm going to go with the debt ceiling crisis. And what a week. You know, if we were following the news earlier on Sunday and Monday, it was hard to tell which way it was going to go. At the end of it all, there was a deal that was brokered. It doesn't seem like anybody is too terribly thrilled about it. And then what was supposed to happen, if there wasn't going to be a deal, the economy was supposed to take a dive off a cliff. So what happened was we wound up with a deal and the economy took a dive off the cliff. So let's start with Ben Mansky on this. What's going on?
Well, I think there were many people who were predicting that this deal was going to create great economic harm and that, in fact, the president and Congress both have been on the wrong track for some time. When you look at what we're facing right now, the reality in the United States is that interest on the debt is just 1.4% of our GDP. So when you compare that to historical percentages, or you compare that to other countries, even wealthy countries like Japan, the United States is actually doing much better than we have historically at other times of crisis and than many other countries around the world are doing. So, you know, what really is at stake here, what we're really facing in the short term in terms of that debt ratio, which is, the debt versus GDP, it's a function of the weak economy. When there was a stimulus that went through that had a very positive short-term effect, but it was much smaller than many prominent economists were calling for, and it ended. And now we're in this period of austerity. And, I'll just say, to me, austerity is the modern day economic equivalent of the medieval medical practice of applying leeches to suffering patients. That's essentially what austerity represents, is sucking the lifeblood out of an economy that is already very weak.
And Joe Egelhoff.
Oh, my. Figure to concentrate on is the debt ratio. And Ben spoke about the interest on the debt being low, and the interest on the debt is comparatively low because interest rates are down to zero, and when those begin to rise to more normal levels, interest on debt will not be below averages and norms. What's above average and soaring to unprecedented heights is indeed the debt ratio, the ratio of debt to our total economy, and it's getting out of hand. And conservatives would argue, and have argued, and will continue to argue, that more government in our lives is a deterrent to growth of our country and to growth of the quality of our country. And so we differ greatly on that. And I think conservatives have made their voices heard and believe very strongly that debt needs to be controlled and growth of government needs to be controlled. And, of course, that was the ideological argument for the past several weeks.
Joe Egelhoff, let's start with you on this next one. Yesterday, the stock market took a tumble. Looks like it could yet today. I don't know if you've seen the job numbers that just came out an hour or so ago, but the economy gained 117,000 jobs in July. Not great, but a little better than economists thought it was going to do. How do you read what is happening on the stock market and in relationship to everything else that's going on with the economy? I mean, are we in the running for another recession here?
Well, I don't know. Economists don't know. How do we read the stock market very carefully? I think what's at the center of this is all of our uncertainty with the economy and with government involvement in the economy. And at the same time, the uncertainty with our or the critical the way the American public is critical of our representatives, that comes back to us, and the stock market sees a lack of resolution coming back to the American people. Let's talk about the need for Americans to be courageous and find solutions that perhaps they are austerity, Ben, but they're making the tough decisions. America can't continue spending more than we make, both on a personal level, at state government level, municipal governments, and certainly at a federal government level. And ordinary Americans won't face that decision. We scream and holler at politicians who really showed us the ugliness of policymaking and sausage making in Washington this last week. But we ourselves say, solve the problem, compromise, but don't make me give up my program. Continue to pay me unemployment benefits. Don't cut my Medicare. Don't cut my Social Security. So I think the stock market very much realizes the difficulty Americans and their representatives are going to have in the next many years.
And Ben Mansky, how do you see it?
Well, if you want to look at the long-term debt ratio, that is largely a function of the health system that we have in the United States, in which the U.S. government picks up the tab for 50% of the costs of private corporations. That's what's happening right now. The taxpayers, the American people, are subsidizing very profitable multinational and giant corporations. And so if you want to talk about spending beyond our means, let's talk about that. If you want to solve the debt ratio problem, we should have single-payer health insurance, which, by the way, a majority of the American people continue to support. I'm actually kind of sick of people blaming voters and the American people. Voters actually make their preferences pretty clear. And when you look at the latest polling, I think it's also very clear what voters want, where by a 2-to-1 ratio, they say higher taxes as opposed to more spending. By a 2-to-1 ratio, they say that creating jobs, not cutting spending, should be the priority. Yet that's not what's coming out of Congress. And I understand that conservative ideologues or people who identify themselves as conservatives had a particular point of view, but the reality is it's a minority point of view that has been dominating our politics, and that's the reason why you see such incredible dissatisfaction with our political system right now. In fact, not only is it a minority point of view when you look at the broader body politic, it's a minority point of view within business. And that's what we're seeing this past week, where smart business people know that if consumers don't have the ability to spend, if they're not able to borrow, if they're not able to invest, if they're not able to start new businesses, then the economy will suffer. And I think that what you're seeing right now is a rejection of austerity on the part of many sectors of the business community as well.
We got a call here from Mark, who joins us in Viroqua. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. I'm just absolutely befuddled at the fact that for almost 100 years we've been accumulating this thing called a debt because we went to a debt-based monetary system, and now we're just fudging about whether or not we want the debt increase to go at one rate or another. The most recent agreement didn't do a damn thing about changing the fact that we're using debt as a money system. You can't use debt as money and get anything but more debt. And it doesn't matter the amount of spending in a debt-based monetary system. Every single dollar is a debt and increases the debt down the road. So the exponential growth of debt that we're experiencing right now isn't something that the current administration has anything to do with. It has to do with the fact that we've been using debt as money for almost 100 years.
Mark, thanks for the call. And Ben Mansky, let's start with you. A reaction, we haven't talked about the actual debt ceiling deal. Your thoughts on how that turned out, whether it's a good thing, whether it's going to work.
Well, actually, I'd like to respond directly to what Mark said, sure, too, because when he was talking, it certainly was provocative. Mm-hmm. And what struck me when he says that we've been at this for 100 years, for a century, well, it was about 100 years ago that we saw the beginnings of the modern military-industrial complex. And when you look at our long-term debt, you're looking at healthcare costs increasing, right? But when you look at where we are right now, how we got to this point, the reality is that military spending has been by far and away the number one factor in accumulating this debt. And when you look at where we are at this exact moment right now, we just spent 10 years at war. We're still at war in Iraq and Afghanistan, around the world. And people wonder why the federal government isn't able to pay its bills. So, you know, I'll put that out there to that discussion. In terms of the deal that was cut, you know, it has been roundly satirized and criticized. And I think the satire and criticism has been correct. Essentially, what Congress has done is they've punted to a super committee. And, you know, I think that one of the things that many people are very fearful about is that they expect that within the super committee, we'll see some of the same dynamics we've seen in Congress and the White House, in which you have a very hard-line position representing the oil industry, the petrochemicals industry, which says no new taxes, no tax increases. And a certain percentage of the Democrats on that committee and in Congress will continue to cave. And as a result, working people will continue to feel this invisible hand wrapped around their throats.
And Joe Egelhoff, what do you think about the debt ceiling deal?
Well, I think that Ben continues to bring up more and more hyperboles on big oil and health care and what else? The military-industrial complex. We in America must make decisions about spending for all of these issues and programs. Absolutely. I'm sure that Ben and I disagree about the levels of spending on the, for those programs. We don't disagree that this debt limit agreement was ridiculous and useless. And Mark is exactly right on when he says that, every dollar, a third of every dollar we spend goes on the debt. This and the super committee will do nothing. The super committee will kind of says, as I think an economist from Berkeley said, well, I can't control myself, so I'm putting in this external mechanism to control myself, but I'm also in control of the external mechanism. So the super committee is more punting, more uselessness. But here's a description of what the debt settlement did. The first phase, before the super committee will dictate the second phase. The first phase cuts $21 billion of the 2000 fiscal year deficit of $1.1 trillion. That's $21 billion out of $1,100 billion. It's a grain of sand. And that $1.1 trillion deficit, now that's not the total debt, that's just a one-year deficit projected, is a portion of a total outlay of $3.6 trillion. This deficit is almost one-third of the budget. It's huge, and this deal cut $21 billion in spending. It's useless. So, good points, Mark. Thanks a lot.
And Joe Egelhoff, thanks for that. Now, Ben Mansky, what do you think? The super committee is it useless? Is it not going to do anything?
Well, I think it's going to be very useful, again, to hardliners who know where their paychecks come from. And, you know, I don't have any confidence in it. Frankly, I'm with the majority of Americans who don't have confidence in the institution of Congress. And so we do have this fundamental democracy problem in the United States, in which there are very clear majorities on all kinds of issues, whether you're looking at war and empire, where the vast majority of Americans favor a withdrawal from Iraq and Afghanistan. The president was elected on that promise. The Democrats were elected on that promise. They didn't do it. The vast majority of Americans support higher taxes on the rich, who, by the way, they're the ones, speaking of hyperbole, who've been getting away without paying their share. And, you know, when I look at the current moment right now, you know, I can't help but recognize that 10 years ago, we didn't have these deficits. And now we're at the end of a period of frankly, Republican rule. And I think many listeners know I'm not a Democrat, so I'm just speaking from the point of view of a progressive here. But we're at the end of a period of Republican policies, and we have seen the results of it. And now they want us to do even more of the same. And it hasn't worked. Most economists, frankly, disagree with you, Joe, on these questions. And it's really time to invest in poor people and working people to get the economy moving, and in small businesses, not the major corporations, but small businesses.
Let's take a call now. John is with us from Appleton. Hi, John.
Yeah, Yes, I just loved Benansky's comparison of the debt deal with medieval bloodletting. I think it's right on. But what's interesting to me, I mean, and I guess piece of evidence on that is that in the market yesterday, Oshkosh Truck, a local military contractor, went down 9%, much bit greater than other stocks. So I think, ideologues talk about everybody's concerned about the size of government, but investors are pretty practical in terms of how the economy works, and I think they're Keynesian and are monetarists rather than this strange conservative ideology about people reacting to the size of government. So I think they really reacting negatively to the debt deal, but I think it's interesting that commentators have really avoided, as far as I can tell, drawing any comparison between this debt deal and the decline in the market the last few days.
John, interesting viewpoints. Joe Egelhoff, I don't know if you want to have anything to add to that.
No, I think I think there needs to be a connection drawn, and I think John is right on in pointing that out.
And Ben, anything you'd like to add?
Well, I think that John and certainly the majority of Americans do see that connection, and I think it is interesting that most commentators don't draw the connection and actually seem to spend most of their time dancing around the really substantive issues.
And I want to,
with the exception of Gene Purcell here.
Well, there you go. I'll take it wherever I can find it. Let's go to James now. James joins us from Janesville. Hi, James.
Well, good morning, and I'm just one of those people that see all this stuff going on in Washington, and I wish I could put my faith in government, but government only proves how well it can waste money. I mean, they'll come in front of the camera and tell you about a great program, but it seems to be no different than any infomercial that's on late at night. I mean, the post office can't even deliver letters without losing $8 billion a year, so I wish government had the answer. But it's proven time and time again that it's just inefficient and doesn't do a good job with the taxpayers' money. Thank you.
James, there you go. Let's start with Ben Mansky on this. And James did not point out a particular party in this. It was interesting to say. He wasn't looking at Democrats or Republicans. He used the big government there. Ben Mansky and Joe Egelhoff, are people losing faith in government as a whole, taking kind of the partisan side of this out of it?
Well, I think comparatively, people seem to be looking for more government spending right now. And so if you want to look at it, there's always been a loss of faith in government in our country. That's actually one of the things that makes us Americans. We're suspicious not only of big government, but actually even more so of big capital, of big corporations. Any kind of large institution in which it's possible for very few at the top to find ways to make money move in directions that are to their own interest, Americans are suspicious of, and rightfully so. I have suspicions. I have actual real concerns about a lot of federal programs. And again, to keep our eyes on the prize, the reality is that the most waste and the most spending goes on in terms of military contracting and military spending in the United States. So let's be real here. In terms of the post office, I'm actually personally a huge fan of the post office. What I'll point out is that they are in an industry which is suffering hugely, just like the publishing industry. It's an old technology. And, frankly, if we didn't have the U.S. Postal Service right now, I would bet you that, James, that many people in rural Wisconsin would not be able to get mail at all. There would be no delivery. UPS, FedEx would not provide those services because the reality is more and more people are using the internet and other forms of communication. So that's not their fault at all. And having traveled around the world, I'll tell you, we got one of the best postal services around.
So, Joe Egelhoff, how's your faith in government these days?
Well, my faith in government is probably as it's always been. My first faith is in myself and reliance on myself and reliance on my ability to care for others and to provide the safety net where necessary. And I want my government to provide safety nets to those in need. I want my government to provide military protection of my country. I don't know the proper level of military spending, but I do know that the U.S., I've been around the globe a bit and haven't studied military forces, but do know that I'm very proud of the U.S. military. I'm very proud and not just appreciative, but I know the tremendous, unspeakable value of the U.S. military in protecting my freedom. Now, how much activity do we have to do around the world? I don't know, but I think that Ben is harping up the wrong tree by constantly attacking the attacking military spending. I think Ben is harping up the wrong tree by attacking the rich and trying to find the solution to the problem in the rich. If we take 100% of all of those earning $250,000 and more, it won't cut the deficit. The deficit, not the debt, just the annual deficit. It won't cut the deficit by 20%. It's just not the solution. So I want to come back to something I said earlier. I think I said that this is if this is a problem in our representatives and in our government, it's a problem of ours. We have met the enemy, and it is us. We have to come to grips with the need for compromise. And when Ben talks about surveys where people want this and people want that, the surveys that are reliable surveys are surveys that said if we had to cut X billions of dollars from the budget, where would you cut them? And when folks have to make choices, it's very difficult. If we had to cut this or this, or if we had to increase taxes on this, and keep in mind that almost 50% of the people in our country don't pay federal taxes. So it's easy for them to
That's not true, actually.
Yeah, I think it is.
No, it's not.
47% of the American public do not pay net taxes, net federal
taxes.
Unless you
count out Social Security and other elements that are taken out of our paychecks.
An entitlement and an insurance.
No, it's investment that's being stolen from future generations.
Oh, Ben.
No, it is. I'm not going to have Social Security because of your policies.
It's easy for these folks.
I've been paying it, but I'm not getting it back.
Tax others more. Well, we need to get Social Security back. But we need to rely on ourselves and understand the contradictions and the difficult decisions that our representatives have to make and that we're asking them to make.
And right now, unfortunately, we have to take a break because the clock won't let us stop with that. So we will take a break. When we come back, we're going to turn to some news here in Wisconsin, take a look at what's happening in terms of recall elections. We've got one coming up in less than a week, and we'll talk about that and some of the money that's being spent here. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine this week. We're joined by Joe Egelhoff, Research and Development Specialist at Wisconsin Family Action, and Ben Mansky with the Executive Director of Liberty Tree. And we're talking about some of the big stories of the week. We've been talking a lot about federal issues, federal financial issues. We're turning to the state of Wisconsin right now because plenty of things going on there, too. We'll start with Joe Egelhoff on this. Record spending in the recall elections that the first round comes up next Tuesday. And Joe Egelhoff, the record spending not necessarily all coming from within the state. What do you think about that?
Oh, my. Yeah, not necessarily coming from within the state. That's for sure. Well, Wisconsin is the epicenter of a change in union structure in the country. I think this is a fight for union dues. If union dues and memberships were made voluntary, like so much else in our country, would unions survive? I think that's the question to ask when you see the incivility going on, and when you see $30 million in campaign spending, why aren't we seeing campaign ads that are about Wisconsin's collective bargaining rules, which is what this recalls were supposedly all about?
Ben Mansky.
Maybe because these new rules are working.
These recalls are actually about all kinds of things. They're about the way in which spending on education and on that safety net that you said you were for has been
Hey,
let me finish.
Wait,
let me finish.
No.
These recalls. No, excuse me.
Okay. Oh, everybody, stop.
All right.
I get to talk now. One person talks at a time. I'm going to let Ben talk, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to let Joe talk.
That's right.
All right, Ben.
You got to let me get at least two sentences out. Maybe four, we can go back into it. But these recalls are about much more than simply the question of collective bargaining rights, which is not a simple question. I mean, one thing I find interesting is the way that we hear talk now from Governor Walker about balance. He was claiming that he had a spirit of bipartisanship in Wisconsin that is missing in the rest of the country. But yet the policies really have been extreme. And it's how extreme those policies have been that has drawn not only folks who are union members and members of union families, and by the way, there are a lot of union families in Wisconsin, but also students, community members, the poor, advocates for the poor and the disabled, out in these recall elections because the investment Wisconsin has made in the poor and in our kids has been decimated in the budget that we just went through. So, And then the other thing, that I find very amusing is hearing talk about this outside spending from the very folks who would be hurt the most if we got rid of that outside spending. I would make a deal right now. We cut out that outside spending and actually let's cut out the big money entirely. And there wouldn't even be any question about what's going to happen on Tuesday.
Now, Joe Egelhoff, your response.
Well, the complainant I hear concerning the $30 million in spending is primarily left-leaning Mike McCabe and talking about reforming campaign spending. That's a whole other discussion, and I think it has to do with the size of the size of government. To have recall elections based on a vote that your representative takes is nonsensical. I mean, talk about faith in government. Your elected officials are elected to cast votes. They cast a vote, and in Wisconsin, apparently they can get recalled because they cast a vote. Now, when senators leave the state and don't do their job, that to me seems like a reason for recall. We can talk about our ideological difference in the policies. Let's also talk about the way that Wisconsin has addressed and nearly solved its budget situation that had been deteriorating for two decades. We've seen tremendous success right here in Appleton with the school district balancing its budget, not having to lay off teachers, not having to decrease class size. We saw the same results in neighboring Kaukauna here and in school districts throughout the state. These are policies that are working, and we'll fight the battle. Ben is right. We'll fight those battles on this Tuesday and ridiculously on the next Tuesday. So silly to have four different elections. But, yeah, Ben is right. There are about a lot of things, but should we have recalls based on a representative's vote?
Let me ask you this, and we'll start with Joe Egelhoff on this. Both Republicans and Democrats say they are going to turn out in droves. I don't know if that's the right term, but they both say they're going to turn out for this. Joe Egelhoff, as you take a look at the various races around the state, do you think there's going to be a big turnout?
Boy, I just don't know. I do know that both of our camps believe that turnout is the ticket. It's a summer election. It's very confusing. GAB again has dictated four different elections, which is just ridiculous. So it's confusing. It's the middle of summer. It's it's unusual dates. So turnout will make a big difference, and we'll see who makes the biggest difference. Bringing in folks from out of state, regardless whether on the left or the right. I think most of them are on the left. Will that
it's
make a
true,
difference?
But...
And, of course, that's why this extensive absentee ballot application procedure has gone forward on both sides as well. So we'll see.
And, Ben, what do you think turnout's going to be?
Well, I think turnout's going to be very high. The question is how many people who are legitimate voters who are qualified to vote will be turned away. And that's the biggest concern, I think, going into Tuesday with this new voter ID legislation, which has turned the Wisconsin tradition on its head, how that's going to be implemented, what the lines are going to look like, whether there's going to be issues there. That's something a lot of people are concerned about. I do think I find it strange to hear Joe talking about the fact that we have two different election dates. The reason why we have two different election dates is because the Republican Party and other folks chose to run fake candidates in the Democratic primaries. And so, therefore, the Democrats who are up for recall have an election a week out. That wasn't something the GAB did. That's something that folks who wanted to recall those who left the state chose to do. And so, frankly, you're the folks who are costing taxpayers additional money by doing that. But when you look at the coming Tuesday election, you know, not just one bad vote, but a series of bad votes that cause hundreds of thousands of people to turn out in the streets of the state is exactly why Wisconsin, with its historically progressive tradition, has a recall law. This is exactly what the recall is about. And that's actually why I, as a proponent of democracy, support the recall process for both those Democrats and Republicans who are facing a new election.
Now, as I understand it, you'll be asked to show a photo ID when you go to vote this time, but it won't actually be turned away if you don't have it. I think it's just kind of a drill.
Well, and there's also been real problems with people who have been attempting to obtain those photo IDs this time around, with folks going to the DMV and with the DMV not having had enough time to actually get their procedures in place. And so that's one of the main concerns, is people who don't have a photo ID that has their current address at it.
All right, let's go to the phones, and it looks like Boyd Jones joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Gene. Good morning to you, Ben, and to you, Jill. Just a couple things. I actually think Ben is spot on. In terms of the money has to be taken out, this is something that, until that's done on all levels, whether it's the national, the state, the local, this is something that socialists, which I identify myself as, and libertarians such as Ron Paul, all agree the money has to be taken out, and then and I think that will make things just a lot more legitimate. And then the other thing is, well, people on the right in the state can criticize that the Democrats decided to up and leave and didn't want to do their job, but I have to say, I think they were working. I think they were not just sitting in a hotel and, you know, staring at the ceiling. And if I can just back this up, when Dave Hansen was recalled, apparently the people in his district thought he was doing his job, too, because I guess he won by some pretty solid numbers. And I'll leave it at that. I'll take my comments on off the air.
All thanks. Right, Boyd, thanks for the call. And let's start with Ben Mansky on this. Anything we can divine from the Hansen election in Green Bay?
Well, I want to be honest here, so I'm going to be,
okay.
Which is that he didn't have serious opposition.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do fully expect that on the 16th that you will see a result that returns those two senators to office. And I think the reason for that is that as much as a minority of people in Wisconsin were angry that those senators left the state capitol, left their families, left their homes, left security, and went across state lines in order to ensure that there wasn't a rushed vote that was being forced through in no time at all, the majority of Wisconsinites applauded them, including, I think, a majority of people in their districts applauded them. So, you know, that to me was a courageous act. I'll tell you, from the point of view of myself as somebody who works at Madison Area Technical College, who's an instructor, and who is very concerned about the future of higher education and K through 12 in Wisconsin, I was only upset that they chose to come back. You know, the reality from the point of view of many of us is that government, yeah, big government, state government, and the federal government are beholden to major corporations, and that we needed actually to have that process gummed up so that the people of Wisconsin could actually become part of the process.
And Joe Engelhoff, Boyd had a lot to say, so I'll let you pick which parts you'd like to respond to.
Well, thanks, Gene. I appreciate that. Well, it's ridiculous to say the legislators were doing their job outside of the state that they represent people in. So I disagree. I also disagree that it was a courageous act. Also want to address Ben's comment that this is the four different elections is the GOP's fault. We'll just disagree on that. The GOP was very specific in requesting a logical two-election system, one date for primaries if they had primaries, and one date for the general election. And the GAB chose not to do that. I don't want to question why, but the GAB made the decision for these that drove these four separate elections. I disagree with Boyd and his philosophy about government. So we'll just disagree on that.
All right, we're going to be taking a break right now. When we come back, we will come back with the Week in Review quiz, and we will continue our discussion on some other things going on here in Wisconsin, maybe some other news as well. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardy, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 15 minutes before 9 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the Week in Review, and it's time now for the Week in Review quiz. So here's how it works. I've got a question here, a relatively simple question. I'll give you the phone number, which is 800-642-1234. You can call in with your answer there, or you can email us, too. That's at talk@wpr.org. So here's the deal. We've got a pretty straightforward quiz question this week. We've been talking a lot about recall elections for the past 15 minutes or so. So with the upcoming recall elections on Tuesday in mind, just keeping those in the back of your mind, who are the only two Wisconsin state lawmakers who have lost a recall election? Which two Wisconsin lawmakers, have lost a recall election here? So our numbers again, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And talk@wpr.org if you'd like to get to us that way. All right, let's get back to our questions right now with our guests. Ben Mansky is with us, the executive director of Liberty Tree, and Joe Egelhoff is with us as well, research and development specialist at Wisconsin Family Action. And I want to turn back to some national news for a moment. We were talking earlier, of course, about all the discussion on the debt ceiling and so forth. But then the other day, President Obama, of course, celebrating his 50th birthday, and I don't know if kicking off is the right term, but he's certainly running for president, attending a fundraiser in Chicago. Joe Egelhoff, let's start with you on this. As we look at what is shaping up in 2012, we've got President Obama and a whole raft of Republicans. Are you seeing any clarity as we head towards the 2012 presidential elections in terms of who's going to be the candidates on the Republican side?
No, I'm surely not. And it's exciting to me. It's part of the process. Although it would feel better, I guess, if one moved ahead of the pack, but that's not how it works. And I'm pleased with how the system works. I'd like to see a candidate that is ready to call President Obama on the errors of his ways and to tell the nation when he's lying or stretching the truth. I want him called on, and I'd like a candidate that's straightforward and honest, and you know, I'm not sure that the American public's ready for that, but that's certainly what I'm looking for, and don't see anyone coming out of the pack yet.
Interesting. Ben Mansky.
So none of them strike you as straightforward or honest quite yet.
Well said.
Yeah. I was just going to say that actually there are many Democrats who appear to agree with Joe on this. I just saw last night that the Progressive Caucus of the Democratic Party in California, which, of course, is the largest state party for the Democrats and the most important state, is calling for a primary challenge to President Obama. And there are increasing voices within the Democratic Party that are saying that there needs to be a progressive challenge to President Obama in the coming year, because the reality is that the man who campaigned in 2008 for the presidency is not the man who is governing right now. And if progressives don't have a voice in the presidential elections, then that voice will essentially be silent as a result. I've actually been on the receiving end of this, which has been quite strange for me. I can't even tell you the amount of hate mail I've gotten from people who I assume are lifelong Democrats. I can tell by the sense of betrayal in their email messages and their phone messages. others who think that because I'm organizing a National Democracy Convention at the end of the month, that's a Democratic Party convention. And they say Obama's betrayed us, he hasn't kept his promises, and so on. No, this is a nonpartisan national gathering we're having with folks from all sides. But when you look at the sense of betrayal around the presidency, you know, I'll also just say that I don't feel it personally. I didn't expect that that Barack Obama was going to do something new with the presidency. The reality is the executive branch has gotten more and more powerful under both Democrats and Republicans for over a century now. And, you know, I think that what we need to really invest in this country is building democracy from the bottom up in our communities, at the state level, and not get so fixated on partisanship, but really focus on the policies and on increasing popular power, on increasing democracy and participation wherever possible.
Yeah, I want to turn to another race. A lot of people have been talking about the U.S. Senate race here in Wisconsin that's going to be coming up when Senator Cole retires, and you know, all sorts of names being bandied about. I have no idea who's going to run and who's not going to run. But Tommy Thompson the other day, let's see what he said. You can't take over the Senate without having a Republican senator from Wisconsin. Who is the strongest candidate to win that seat? I believe it's myself. Does Tommy Thompson change the equation in any of this? And we'll start with Ben Mansky on this.
Well, I think there's no question that he would change the equation if he got into the race next year. I guess what that also says is that he doesn't consider Ron Johnson a Republican. And I would say that maybe Tommy's right. Maybe Ron Johnson is not an old school Republican. Maybe he's something else entirely. But clearly you'd have to take Tommy Thompson seriously. You have to take Tammy Baldwin seriously in that race. She's clearly building momentum for a state race for U.S. Senate. The other race that I'm very interested in is the governor's race next year. I fully expect that that's going to be what people are going to be focused on after Tuesday. If there is a turnaround in the state Senate, I think you'll see an incredible amount of momentum. I think you'll see it either way, but there'll be a really big boost for that, for the governor's race recall. They did it in Ohio in terms of getting 1.2 million signatures for a ballot initiative. I would expect that would happen here. And I'm curious about who the candidates will be in that race as well.
All right. And Joe Egelhoff, let's start with the Senate candidate, and then we can move on to possibility of governor's recall.
Does Tommy Thompson change the race?
I suppose
he does. It's going to be a great race on the Democrat side and the Republican side and any other side that Ben might bring into it. I'm looking forward to the positions taken by Tommy Thompson and Ted Kopanky and anyone who and Tammy Baldwin, anyone else who gets in the race. I think that at this point in time, the Republicans in the state and the majority of residents in the state prefer Ron Johnson over Tommy Thompson. But we'll see, and they won't be running against each other, of course. The governor's race, Ben is right on in relating the recall elections with the governor's race. The earlier call, Boyd, I think, mentioned the Dave Hansen race, and Ben was exactly right saying the hoopla over his victory was overstated because his opponent was a lesser opponent, and it was an easy win for Dave Hansen. The results of the recalls will provide energy and impetus for the victor, and that's why they're so important, and that's why there's $30 million that's already poured into the state. This will affect the governorship. It will affect governorships throughout the country and legislatures throughout the country. So really, really critical elections next Tuesday and the next Tuesday.
All right. 800-642-1234, by the way, if you wanted to get in and answer our Week in Review quiz question. Remember that question again? Only two Wisconsin state lawmakers who have lost a recall election. We'll have that answer for you in just a minute or two. 800-642-1234. And I hate to put both of you on the spot right now, but let's start with Joe Egelhoff on this. As you look ahead to those recall races that we've been talking about, the ones that I think everybody agrees are important, any predictions, or is it just too dicey to say?
I have no predictions. It's too dicey to say. I'm spending 24 hours a day working for to retain a pro-family, pro-life majority in the state Senate. These races are way too close. There's way too much money, way too much national input, and those of us both sides, the left and the right, are working very hard. And you have to say it's democracy in action.
Ben Mansky.
Well, I think the recall process itself is democracy in action. I don't know about all that money coming in. And I think when you look at the momentum in terms of people, which are, of course, is, you know, how it's supposed to work in this society where people power, the vote of the people, volunteer work and so on is supposed to decide the day. I think very clearly any independent observer has to say that the momentum is on the side of the Democrats on Tuesday's election. They clearly have more people on the street. They clearly have people mobilized all over the state. I think there's clearly more money on the side of the Republicans by some estimates by a 5-to-20 ratio, depending on whether you look at independent expenditures or not. And that's just an objective reality. And, you know, I haven't seen any polling to the contrary. All the polling I've seen shows that 2 to 3 of these seats on Tuesday are very clearly going to switch sides. And it's just a question of whether the other races where there's a slight majority, you know, by 2 or 3%, so just at the margin of error for the challenger, for the Democratic challenger, whether those actually come through on Election Day. So that is, of course, why so many people are taking Tuesday so seriously.
And we've got 6 races, of course, coming up this Tuesday. And as we start wrapping up the hour, Ben Mansky, and I want to just focus in on this recall election a bit. And in terms of the tenor of the debate, in terms of the tone, in terms of whether the issues are getting covered adequately, do you think these have been good races in that regard? Do you think people on both sides are aware of the actual issues and that they're getting it through the campaigns?
Well, I think despite the advertising on television, which I don't think has been helpful, I think that the voters and the electorate clearly are aware of the issues. That's why in many of these communities you saw not only hundreds, but in some cases thousands of people turning out to protest the governor's policies over the course of this past year. So I think people are aware of the issues regardless of this advertising. The concern, of course, is that there's always, you know, in any election, there might be 20% of the electorate who will make up their minds on a particular day. In this case, I think it will be many fewer who are undecided before they go in to vote. And in fact, when you look at our current governor, he's got a rare distinction in that the fewest members of the electorate of any governor of any state in the country are undecided about Governor Scott Walker. His policies are very clearly unpopular, and people don't have to make up their minds.
And Joe Egelhoff, you think people have the drift of the elections? Are they getting what they need?
I'm looking forward to the elections to hear the voice of the silent majority that was discontented with, repulsed by at times, and continues to be the incivility of the objections to the Walker policies, objections to the budget being balanced. We'll see. The dollars, I think we'll have to look at the dollar. I think there are a tremendous amount of dollars, many, many more dollars from the left coming into the state, and as a portion of that, $30 million. But we'll look at the analysis that indeed Mike McCabe and his folks do quite well. The tone is harsh. That speaks to the $30 million in spending. I think voters know what they're doing, and they filter out that harsh stuff well.
Okay, and we've got to leave it there. And Joe Egelhoff, thanks for your time this morning. Ben Mansky, thanks for you. And I've got to answer that quiz question before we go. Who are the only two Wisconsin state lawmakers to lose a recall election? The answer is, according to the sheet in front of me, Senators George Petak, back in Milwaukee, and Gary George. So there you go. Roger in Black River Falls is our quiz winner today. Thanks for that call. Thanks to Chris Molina for his on-air production, Bill Martins for his engineering help, Rob Ferret for producing things. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.